Chapter 5. Betty's chamber. He knew every room in the house well. The young horseman who had passed him, having evidently left his steed somewhere under the trees also, was perceptible at the top of the ladder, immediately outside Betty's window. While Tupcombe watched, a cloaked female figure stepped timidly over the sill, and the two cautiously descended. One before the other, the young man's arms enclosing the young woman between his grasp of the ladder, so that she could not fall. As soon as they reached the bottom, young Phillipson quickly removed the ladder, and hid it under the bushes. The pair disappeared, till, in a few minutes, Tupcombe could discern a horse emerging from a remoter part of the umbrage. The horse carried double, the girl being on a pillion behind her lover. Tupcombe hardly knew what to do or think. Yet, though this was not exactly the kind of flight that had been intended, as he had certainly escaped. He went back to his own animal, and rode round to the servant's door, where he delivered the letter for Mrs. Dornell. To leave a verbal message for Betty was now impossible. The court servants desired him to stay over the night, but he would not do so, desiring to get back to the squire as soon as possible and tell what he had seen. Whether he ought not to have intercepted the young people and carried off Betty himself to her father, he did not know. However, it was too late to think of that now, and without wetting his lips or swallowing a crumb, Tupcombe turned his back upon King's Hintock Court. It was not till he had advanced a considerable distance on his way homeward that, halting under the lantern of a roadside inn, while the horse was watered, there came a traveler from the opposite direction in a hired coach. The lantern lit the stranger's face as he passed along, and dropped into the shade. Tupcombe exulted for the moment, though he could hardly have justified his exultation. The belated traveler was Reynard, and another had stepped in before him. You may now be willing to know of the fortunes of Miss Betty. Left much to herself through the intervening days, as he had ample time to brood over her desperate attempt at the stratagem of infection thwarted, apparently, by her mother's promptitude. In what other way to guy in time she could not think. Thus drew on the day and the hour of the evening on which her husband was expected to announce himself. At some period after dark, when she could not tell, a tap at the window, twice and thrice repeated, became audible. It caused her to start up, for the only visitant in her mind was the one whose advances as he had so feared, as to risk health and life to repel him. She crept to the window, and heard a whisper without. It is I, Charlie, apostrophe said the voice. Betty's face fired with excitement. As he had latterly begun to doubt her admirer's staunchness, fancying his love to be going off in mere attentions which neither committed him nor herself very deeply. She opened the window, saying in a joyous whisper, Oh, Charlie, I thought you had deserted me quite. ... He assured her he had not done that, and that he had a horse in waiting, if she would ride off with him. You must come quickly, ... he said, for Reynard's on the way. ... To throw a cloak round herself was the work of a moment, and assuring herself that her door was locked against a surprise, she climbed over the windowsill and descended with him as we have seen. Her mother, meanwhile, having received Tupcombe's note, found the news of her husband's illness so serious as to displace her thoughts of the coming son-in-law, and as he hastened to tell her daughter of the squire's dangerous condition, thinking it might be desirable to take her to her father's bedside. On trying the door of the girl's room, she found it still locked. Mrs. Dornell called, but there was no answer. Full of misgivings, she privately fetched the old house steward, and bade him burst open the door, an order by no means easy to execute, the joinery of the court being massively constructed. However, the lock sprang open at last, and she entered Betty's chamber, only to find the window unfastened and the bird flown. For a moment Mrs. Dornell was staggered. Then it occurred to her that Betty might have privately obtained from Tupcombe the news of her father's serious illness, and, fearing she might be kept back to meet her husband, have gone off with that obstinate and biased servitor to Falls Park, The more she thought it over, the more probable did the supposition appear, and binding her own headman to secrecy as to Betty's movements, whether as she conjectured or otherwise, Mrs. Dornell herself prepared to set out. As he had no suspicion how seriously her husband's malady had been aggravated by his ride to Bristol, and thought more of Betty's affairs than of her own. That Betty's husband should arrive by some other road tonight, and find neither wife nor mother-in-law to receive him, and no explanation of their absence, was possible. But never forgetting chances, Mrs. Dornell, as she journeyed, kept her eyes fixed upon the highway on the off side, where, before as he had reached the town of Ivell, the hired coach containing Stephen Reynard flashed into the lamplight of her own carriage. Mrs. Dornell's coachman pulled up, in obedience to a direction she had given him at starting. The other coach was hailed, a few words passed, and Reynard alighted, and came to Mrs. Dornell's carriage window. "Come inside," apostrophe says she. "I want to speak privately to you. Why are you so late?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, one hindrance and another, apostrophe says he. "I meant to be at the court by 8 at latest. My gratitude for your letter. I hope, apostrophe, you must not try to see Betty yet," apostrophe said she. "There be far other and newer reasons against your seeing her now than there were when I wrote." Apostrophe, apostrophe, the circumstances were such that Mrs. Dornell could not possibly conceal them entirely. Nothing short of knowing some of the facts would prevent his blindly acting in a manner which might be fatal to the future. Moreover, there are times when deeper intriguers than Mrs. Dornell feel that they must let out a few truths, if only in self-indulgence. So she told so much of recent surprises as that Betty's heart had been attracted by another image than his, and that his insisting on visiting her now might drive the girl to desperation. "Betty has, in fact, rushed off to her father to avoid you," apostrophe she said. "But if you wait, she will soon forget this young man, and you will have nothing to fear." Apostrophe, apostrophe, as a woman and a mother she could go no further, and Betty's desperate attempt to infect herself the week before as a means of repelling him, together with the alarming possibility that, after all, as he had not gone to her father, but to her lover, was not revealed. "Well," apostrophe sighed the diplomatist, in a tone unexpectedly quiet, "such things have been known before. After all, she may prefer me to him someday, when she reflects how very differently I might have acted than I am going to act towards her. But I'll say no more about that now. I can have a bed at your house for tonight?" Apostrophe, "Tonight, certainly." "And you leave tomorrow morning early?" Apostrophe, she spoke anxiously, for on no account did she wish him to make further discoveries. "My husband is so seriously ill," apostrophe she continued, "that my absence and Betty's on your arrival is naturally accounted for." Apostrophe, apostrophe, he promised to leave early, and to write to her soon. "And when I think the time is ripe," apostrophe he said, "I'll write to her. I may have something to tell her that will bring her to graciousness." Apostrophe, apostrophe, it was about 1 o'clock in the morning when Mrs. Dornell reached Falls Park. A double blow awaited her there. Betty had not arrived. Her flight had been elsewhither, and her stricken mother divined with whom. She ascended to the bedside of her husband, where to her concern she found that the physician had given up all hope. The squire was sinking, and his extreme weakness had almost changed his character, except in the particular that his old obstinacy sustained him in a refusal to see a clergyman. He shed tears at the least word, and sobbed at the sight of his wife. He asked for Betty, and it was with a heavy heart that Mrs. Dornell told him that the girl had not accompanied her. "He is not keeping her away?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "No, no. He is going back, he is not coming to her for some time." Apostrophe, "Then what is detaining her cruel, neglectful maid?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "No, no, Thomas, she could not come." Apostrophe, apostrophe, "How's that?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, somehow the solemnity of these last moments of his gave him inquisitorial power, and the too cold wife could not conceal from him the flight which had taken place from King's Hintock that night. To her amazement, the effect upon him was electrical. What Betty A. Trump after all? Hurrah! She's her father's own maid. She's game. She knew he was her father's own choice. She vowed that my man should win. Well done, Bet. Ha! Ha! Hurrah! Apostrophe, he had raised himself in bed by starts as he spoke, and now fell back exhausted. He never uttered another word, and died before the dawn. People said there had not been such an ungenteel death in a good county family for years. Now I will go back to the time of Betty's riding off on the pillion behind her lover. They left the park by an obscure gate to the east, and presently found themselves in the lonely and solitary length of the old Roman road now called Long Ash Lane. By this time they were rather alarmed at their own performance, for they were both young and inexperienced. Hence they proceeded almost in silence till they came to a mean roadside inn which was not yet closed. When Betty, who had held on to him with much misgiving all this while, felt dreadfully unwell, and said she thought she would like to get down. They accordingly dismounted from the jaded animal that had brought them, and were shown into a small dark parlor, where they stood side by side awkwardly, like the fugitives they were. A light was brought, and when they were left alone Betty threw off the cloak which had enveloped her. No sooner did young Phillipson see her face than he uttered an alarmed exclamation. Why, Lord, Lord, you are sickening for the smallpox. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he cried. Oh, I forgot. Apostrophe, apostrophe, faltered Betty. And then she informed him that, on hearing of her husband's approach the week before, in a desperate attempt to keep him from her side, as he had tried to imbibe the infection, an act which till this moment as he had supposed to have been ineffectual, imagining her feverishness to be the result of her excitement. The effect of this discovery upon young Phillipson was overwhelming. Better seasoned men than he would not have been proof against it, and he was only a little over her own age. And you've been holding on to me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said. And suppose you get worse, and we both have it, what shall we do? Won't you be a fright in a month or two, poor, poor Betty? Apostrophe, apostrophe, in his horror he attempted to laugh, but the laugh ended in a weakly giggle. She was more woman than girl by this time, and realized his feeling. What in trying to keep off him, I keep off you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said miserably. Do you hate me, because I am going to be ugly and ill? Apostrophe, oh no, no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said soothingly. But I am thinking, if it is quite right for us to do this. You see, dear Betty, if he was not married it would be different. You are not in honor married to him, we've often said. Still you are his by law, and you can't be mine whilst he's alive. And with this terrible sickness coming on, perhaps you had better let me take you back, and climb in at the window again. Apostrophe, apostrophe, is this your love? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Betty reproachfully. Oh, if he was sickening for the plague itself, and going to be as ugly as the usher in the church vestry, I wouldn't apostrophe, no, no, you mistake, upon my soul. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but Betty with a swollen heart, had rewrapped herself and gone out of the door. The horse was still standing there. She mounted by the help of the upping stock, and when he had followed her she said, Do not come near me, Charlie. But please lead the horse, so that if you've not caught anything already you'll not catch it going back. After all, what keeps off you may keep off him. Now onward. Apostrophe, he did not resist her command, and back they went by the way they had come, Betty shedding bitter tears at the retribution as he had already brought upon herself. For though as he had reproached Phillipson, she was staunch enough not to blame him in her secret heart for showing that his love was only skin deep. The horse was stopped in the plantation, and they walked silently to the lawn, reaching the bushes wherein the ladder still lay. Will you put it up for me? she asked mournfully. He re-erected the ladder without a word, but when she approached to ascend he said, "Goodbye, Betty." "Goodbye." said she, and involuntarily turned her face towards his. He hung back from imprinting the expected kiss, at which Betty started, as if he had received a poignant wound. She moved away so suddenly that he hardly had time to follow her up the ladder to prevent her falling. "Tell your mother to get the doctor at once," he said anxiously. She stepped in without looking behind. He descended, withdrew the ladder, and went away. Alone in her chamber, Betty flung herself upon her face on the bed and burst into shaking sobs. Yet she would not admit to herself that her lover's conduct was unreasonable, only that her rash act of the previous week had been wrong. No one had heard her enter, and she was too worn out, in body and mind, to think or care about medical aid. In an hour or so she felt yet more unwell, positively ill, and nobody coming to her at the usual bedtime, she looked towards the door. Marks of the lock, having been forced, were visible, and this made her chary of summoning a servant. She opened the door cautiously, and sallied forth downstairs. In the dining parlor, as it was called, the now sick and sorry Betty was startled to see at that late hour not her mother, but a man sitting, calmly finishing his supper. There was no servant in the room. He turned, and she recognized her husband. "Where's my mama?" she demanded without preface. "Gone to your father's." "Is that apostrophe?" He stopped, aghast. "Yes, sir. This spotted object is your wife. I've done it, because I don't want you to come near me." He was 16 years her senior, old enough to be compassionate. "My poor child, you must get to bed directly. Don't be afraid of me, I'll carry you upstairs, and send for a doctor instantly." "You don't know what I am." She cried. "I had a lover once, but now he's gone. 'Twasn't I who deserted him. He has deserted me." Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.